Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are coming back at you after having missed a week.
Yes,
so sorry,
missed a week.
Everybody, you know.
My bad.
It is Corey's bad. He had the audacity, the gall
to be able to walk when I'm 70.
To get cleated in the knee and have to have surgery. He was out with surgery. It didn't line up to where we could record. Corey, how are you?
And me not being on pain meds.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm not on pain meds right now.
Yeah. We couldn't find a moment where he was not just stoned out of his gourd on pain meds. So, how are you feeling, Corey? You okay?
I'm very good. Been off pain meds for a while now.
Okay.
Days. Haven't taken any since. We're recording here on a Saturday. I haven't taken anything since Tuesday.
Look at you.
From my surgery the Thursday before. Knee's very good. Doing well in PT. Already on one crutch. Might be off the crutch at my next PT appointment Monday. I think I could walk without it now, but not going to do that without them telling me to.
Yeah.
Much easier than last time. And yeah, all around, he did good. It's just really itchy now. All the hair that they shaved off is super itchy.
Yeah.
I remember none of it. They walked in, they had a huge needle. They're like, this is your nerve block. And they put something in my IV and they're like, it's going to feel like you've had a couple of margaritas. I don't remember.
After that moment.
The next thing. I knew my leg was fixed. There's three vague moments where I'm like, did they put in my nerve block? Yeah, an hour ago. Okay. And then I remember getting on the table and then putting the thing on my face. All right, count down from 10. And I remember the only thought I had was, I got to six. I'm like, this is taking a bit longer than usual because I've gone under a couple times for surgeries. I've had four or five now. And then I woke up.
Yeah, that's, I don't have a whole lot to go off of, but whenever I had my appendix out, I remember it being like that, where I was super nervous because I had never had that experience. And it was count back from 100. And I remember making it to 98. And then I woke up 6 hours later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. It's good to hear that you're doing well, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been posted up. My leg's basically constantly elevated unless I'm doing, my exercises that I do at home. Just hanging off it, keeping it in its brace. I do have a couple of them, unbuckled right now just because it's not comfortable.
So, yeah, it's a Saturday night. You got to be unbuckled
in
the recliner. You know what I mean?
I'm not the recliner. I'm on our big couch bed.
Ooh.
And so we have a sectional that can be morphed into things and can be turned into a big bed because I had to sleep on it for a couple of days because our bedroom's upstairs and I couldn't go upstairs for a couple of days. I couldn't do stairs. So
yeah. But Corey, surely in this time you've been playing games. Am I right? You've been playing game.
I've been playing game.
You've been playing game, which we will talk about in the truest Epic shocker. Bold italics underline on Epic. Before we talk about games that we've been playing, because we missed last week, we never actually talked about the fact that we saw the Mario movie together.
Yeah, we did.
Corey, we just got out of the movie. The Mario movie.
Woohoo!
what did you think about it?
I loved it.
Scale, gut reaction, a zero is the movie adaptation of Rocket City. A 10 is The Sopranos. What do you give it?
Oh, man. The Sopranos is the benchmark. I mean, Mario's like a 4. But if we're going by just a fun Illumination movie, I give it an 8. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Maybe a little beat. It went from beat to beat a little too quick. I think it could have breathed a little bit more. But all around, good fun, good jokes. I don't know if it's super family friendly because again, there's tons of like existential dread moments, but all together, I really enjoyed it. I would watch it again.
Look at that. You heard it here. Not nearly as good as the Sopranos, but
no, nothing can touch the Sopranos.
Sorry. Woohoo! Mamma Mia, or as it was in the movie, like 8 different times, Mamma Mia. Yeah.
So you think we ever play the accent there, Luigi? And it's just like Chris Pratt.
But we saw it. Friday it came out. It's only going to be a few weeks later before you actually hear what we thought about it. But Corey, what did you think about the Mario movie?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. It was a good time. Enjoyed seeing it with you. I thought it probably could have been longer.
Yeah.
I remember thinking that at the end, I'm like, it was very quick, very fast paced. It jumped from scene to scene. There was like 1-2 moments where I think it took a step back to breathe a bit. And I thought those were some of its better ones. I thought all around, like, you could have been about 15 minutes longer. And I think I'd been really happy with that. It's really good.
Yeah, that's not, and it's a funny thing. Cause I mean, I came from the same perspective. Like, it's not really usually a criticism that people have. Like, most of the time I feel like people say the opposite, like, you could have trimmed that down. Yep. But no, there was a specific section in the movie where they're kind of like traveling.
The montage sequence.
Yeah, it's like a montage. They're traveling Mushroom Kingdom, and it gave off vibes. Like, it's hard to describe, but it's kind of like, it gave off kind of like mediocre fantasy, like media vibes, where it's like, it's almost, because I think the first thing that comes to mind is something like the movie Aragon, where it's like this shitty fantasy experience, and they have like this one set piece or this one thing that they're doing, and they're trying to get to the next big thing, and they don't necessarily know how to get there. So they just like, rather than using that space to kind of like expand upon the characters or like have a meaningful interaction, it's just like, okay, we're just gonna walk over here really quick. Okay, don't pay attention. And like, and that's kind of how it felt. And they're not, because there was like, you know, the montage thing was fine, but it was a thing where it was like, I think they could have used this to have like some conversation between the characters, like, you know, build that up. And it was like it was a small section, but it was a thing where it was like, this feels, there's a part of this that feels really rushed. And if they just kind of slowed it down and pulled it back and gave the characters, it's not like Mario is like full of character development. Like, I mean, just as a character, it's not like people are really expecting that. But if they had taken that direction and really just kind of like gave it a little bit of room to breathe, I think it would have been better for it. But yeah, I mean, same perspective, like had a ton of fun with it. Literally, that was the only thing I came away from that I was like, that I wasn't like super hot on, because, you know, afterward you have some really, like, don't want to like dig in and stuff of like stuff to see. It's not like they're huge spoilers, but like, you know, there's cool stuff like, you know, Donkey Kong section later on in the movie, or some of the earlier Mushroom Kingdom stuff or whatever, or like the introduction to the film being like more Brooklyn, New York than I was expecting. Like, you know, I think all of those things were just like really good and really just fun and solid, and a lot of really neat vibes and a lot of neat like callbacks to a lot of different things. It was just like, it felt like a really just fun movie, a place where you can go and just enjoy yourself, which, I mean, at its core, isn't that just Mario?
Like,
Mario is just enjoying
saying,
yourself.
Wahoo!
Yeah. And it's funny because, not to like dig in too deep on that one topic, but it is a funny thing because, like, Shigeru Miyamoto has been on record as saying, like, video games, I don't know how he genuinely feels now, but I know at one point he was like, video games don't need story. Video games, yeah. Like, video games, you just play a game. We don't need to tell this story. You need a very basic motivation, and then you just do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like you can kind of see, and that is Mario. And I think that carries on, and it is a very funny thing. Like, again, seeing that, like, even with that very basic thing, I think it is a testament to, like, the power of the brand and even some of the actors too. Like, no knock against, I mean, even Chris Pratt as Mario. Like, I was not distracted by Chris Pratt as Mario, which I think is, like,
you kind of forget about it after a little bit. The biggest compliment you can say.
Yeah. You know, you're not sitting there being like, well, this is Chris Pratt and this is not great.
Well, to counter that, anytime I heard Donkey Kong talk, I'm like, that's just Seth Rogen. Which, like, we all knew that going in.
Yes.
The whole time I'm like, this is just Seth Rogen.
Yeah. Which, I mean, to be fair, like, I know some people have been like, that was the worst with Seth Rogen. I liked him
as
Donkey Kong. But yeah, I mean, legitimately, there's no hiding the fact that you just kind of anticipate, like, bong smoke and him going, yeah, at some points.
Yeah, I will say one of my favorite moments was Donkey Kong's introduction when they're doing, like, the whole song was like DK.
The DK rap part.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was so good.
Well, and that was, like, that was the thing too, was, like, the number of even, like, just kind of, I mean, deep cut, quote unquote, like, callbacks to different things. Cause, like, during that song, they didn't really play much of the DK rap, but, like, during that part, you know, it's scanning over the crowd and it zooms in at a couple of points. And you can see, like, the cast of Donkey Kong 64. Like, Chunky Kong is there, and Tiny Kong is there, and Diddy Kong is there. Like, it's stuff like that, just, like, little nods, just like really cool, really smart, a lot of fun. And at the end of it, like, I really hope that Nintendo builds, like, this NCU, if you will, of, like, you know, building up doing more movies in that vein of just having fun. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like, Nintendo is probably the biggest underutilized, like, IP in the movie space. Yep. I feel like.
I agree.
Yeah.
I will say, I think I could do without, like, the 80s rock that showed up so many times for no reason, where I'm like, whoa, why are we playing Take Me On right now?
Yeah.
You know?
Which funny, like, and it popped up. Like, what? Because I had just read the story about it prior, but there were a bunch of people who were up in arms because apparently, like, Take On Me was, like, rumored to have been subbed in for another song that, like, apparently, I can't remember. It's called, like, Go Bananas or Banana something.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it actually, I think, mixes and utilizes a lot of the Donkey Kong theme and stuff, and would have been, like, a perfect fit for that.
Yeah.
And that's what it was planning on doing. But then they went through and put in Take On Me as, like, a more, you know, popular kind of thing. And yeah. And that is one of the, I think that came from Illumination, because Illumination, like, that is the downside of Illumination, is that is what they do.
Yes.
Is they do, like, really plug in a little too much of those pop songs into all of their movies. And I feel like that was probably one of their caveats. It was like, nope, we have a quota. We need one more. Mm-hmm. We got to get it in here somewhere. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Looked wonderful. Was really great. Jack Black as Bowser. If you haven't seen it, also the Jack Black, like, music video of him singing Peaches. Have you seen that?
No, I need to.
No, it's Yeah, it was like film. I can't remember what the YouTube thing is, but he's dressed up as Bowser in a big, like,
oh my gosh,
peach room, and he's playing it on a piano. And
I hope wonderful. It wins an Oscar.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, the song's on like the Billboard Top 100 right now.
Yeah. I mean, it is eligible for Best Original Song if they wish to nominate it.
Yep. I and am.
They should.
It is, I mean, at least 40% that song is why I'm considering getting the Mario LP whenever it comes out.
Yeah.
Just so I can have that on.
Just so you can hear. Peaches, peaches, peaches,
peaches, peaches. I want it, and it's, I have no shame.
I understand. I'm with you.
Yeah. But yeah, Corey, it was good. I'm it excited. Good. People go see it. You should. It was great.
I'm excited for Mario 2. Mario, the Wario, or is it Mario 2 Wario?
I'm very interested into like in what the movie could be. I mean, I would venture a guess that, I mean, if anything out of stuff that they kind of hinted toward, again, like not really spoilers, it's just kind of like it's in trailers. It's kind of just in a few asides, but like I would picture there Rosalina would pop up just yep. given the fact that like there is a Luma that like plays a noticeably like existential role in the movie, and there's also like there are a couple of like really drawn out like moments where they
an illusion
there are a couple of points like I think Peach says like is looking up at the sky and says something about like, you know, something, something, the galaxy. And it's like, yeah. Bam, bam, bam. Like it really kind of seemed to emphasize like the Super Mario Galaxy yeah. part of like things. And so like, that would be my thing. Like if they came out yeah. with a Super Mario 2, like I would imagine that would kind of be a pull in. That it would be awesome to see Wario and mm-hmm. Waluigi. And Daisy, and I mean, bring yes. in the Pantheon, bring in the Yoshis, bring them.
Some Let's Yoshis.
Go. You did. You did see a herd of Yoshis. Yeah. No Yoshi, capital Y Yoshi. Yeah. But
I'm excited for Mario 3 Moo Moo Meadows Drift.
Yes, love it. I played. Hey, listeners who work with me. I'm not sure if anybody does listen that works with me.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we played Mario Kart at work the other day, and yeah, it Champion. Was good. I whipped some booty. It was a lot of fun. Just yeah. played on a projector screen in a conference room.
Love that.
Yeah, it's all it is nice. Always fun. It's nice for me because, you know, I have the good fortune of I work for a company that is like hybrid remote something. Mm-hmm. So like I'm not in office super often. So there are plenty of people from different departments that I don't really interact with. So stuff like that's always kind of nice because it's like, hey, I'm interacting with people that I wouldn't necessarily see otherwise. So, you know, stuff like that. It's team building is what it's called, everybody.
Yeah.
It's not slacking off. It's corporate team building.
Keep Shut telling up. Yourself that.
Yeah. But Corey, since then, we've been playing games.
Yes.
I've been playing games. You've been playing a game.
I've played two games.
Well, let's talk about it. They're both common games between us, but like, let's talk about the one that we finished.
Yes.
Resident Evil 4.
Finished remake. Resident Evil 4.
You had played a fair bit of it last time we recorded. I had played yes. about like 30 minutes. Since then, we have both finished it.
Yes, we have.
Yeah. How did you come off of it?
I loved it. It is my current game of the year.
What?
It's incredibly
Didn't
good.
Did you say that already about something recently? I feel like every game that you play this year becomes your game of the year.
Yeah, that's just kind of how it goes. Then we get to the end. It's like, okay, now we really gotta like, we gotta pare this down. I usually like most games, to be fair.
What was the last? Did you say that about Chia?
Maybe.
I can't remember.
Probably.
Okay. Okay.
I think Chia is very good. I like yeah. Resident Evil 4 Remake better though.
Yeah. I feel you.
Yeah, it's it was phenomenal. What a great ending. Trying to gather my thoughts into line. I think it keeps its campiness very well as its atmospheric horror builds throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has three very distinct phases. Resident Evil 4, you don't want to get into too many spoilers, but you kind of go from the village area to a castle to an island where it's like a very distinct like movement between like enemy types and difficulty, and it's, I guess, like the horror it's trying to put in to you.
Yep.
I think it balances all of that very well with Leon's Boy Scout slash I'm making quippy jokes to just like ease the tension throughout.
Ease the pain.
Yeah, yep. Ease the pain. Yeah, all around. I thought it was phenomenal. 10 out of 10. I think the castle's my favorite section of the game. I do think it's not the scariest. Chapter 13 on the island is the scariest. Yeah. I you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm going to get into that a little bit. But there would be so many times where, because it kind of moves from the villager to like this bit of a cultiest aspect with like some odd chanting. That's just unsettling, but it'd be the worst because you'd be like doing these puzzles and like trying to get between rooms, and all of a sudden they would just come filing around this corner at you. And I'm like, whoa, yep. Whoa, 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 whoa. And you know, you're just like switching to your shoddy immediately. Like, okay, I don't have time to deal with you jump scaring me. Yep. But I think throughout, like that was the best sequence of gameplay throughout, of great level design, great puzzles. Like it's asking you to like think about things, but like stay on your guard kind of throughout, like, hey, like anything can happen at any moment. And yeah, I really, really dug it. Yeah, those are my initial thoughts. We'll get into more as well, but I want to hear what you thought as well.
Love it. Yeah. I also very much enjoyed it. At some point I've talked about like my feelings on the original one. I played it prior to us ever starting the podcast, so, you know, didn't have like full comprehensive thoughts, but by and large, like, it was fine. Whenever I played it, I played the PS4 version of the original game, and it was something where like I played it and I didn't love it. I think like potentially had it been one of those games that I played whenever it came out, like I could see that. I could see loving it, but like now it was the thing where I was like, this is frustrating. This is not hitting. I'm also not connected to Resident Evil as a franchise, really.
Yeah.
So I'm not really drawing off of anything other than this is supposed to be a good game and it doesn't feel like it. I now have played Resident Evil 2. I had that for perspective and then also went on to Remake and very much enjoyed it and had what I feel like is the experience that having played Resident Evil 4 back in 2000, mid-2000, whatever, would have given me, where it was like this, you know, realization of that original feeling, you know, more of the overall atmosphere and the dread. Plus, I mean, it modernizes it in a lot of ways where it's making combat, like, even though it kind of keeps the same sort of like chunky ness about it, it still like makes it more modern. And yep. it opens the world up and it changes yep. a few things and it does this kind of stuff. But like by and large, it was the thing where it was like I was playing through it and I was like, I am really enjoying this. And I got to the end of it and it felt like it had taken such a short time in comparison to mm-hmm. Resident Evil 4. Like Resident Evil 4, the original felt like it dragged for me. I was like, I cannot get through this thing yeah. fast enough. And, and yeah. you know, in playing through Remake, like it was a lot of fun. And it was a really like I've become, we'll talk about it a little bit more later, but I'm becoming more like interested in the Resident Evil lore and franchise. Like not even the lore, because like the lore, I know that there's lore, but it's like the interconnectedness of everything is kind of like borderline nonsense in a way. Yeah. Like it doesn't really yeah. feel like there's a, because even having played Resident Evil 2 back to back with 4, like, you know, Ada Wong's in there and there's like a flashback at the beginning where you're getting some context for that. But by and large, it's like, there's not much that, I mean, there's, it's talking about Umbrella Corporation. Yeah. Ada Wong was a mercenary in 2 and you know that, I mean, that's her whole role. And like, you know, there's a scene that shows like Albert Wesker, who's like big, he's the guy with the sunglasses.
Yeah.
If you, yeah. yeah. The, you know, and there's also what's his face, the army guy who has like a pseudo connection to Leon from some like obscure Resident Evil game that we haven't played. Like, yeah. you know, they do stuff like that, but it's like they, it's not like Resident Evil makes it super easy to be like super invested in the overarching lore of things, but I'm becoming more interested in kind of like feeling out this narrative and getting a sense for this like franchise. And I think like having played it and having played Resident Evil 2, like it really, I'm very like excited for Capcom in just the way that they're able to like take this stuff and really make it the best experience possible. Again, mm-hmm. in kind of like a, like, not to beat this over and over and over again, but like, you know, The Last of Us didn't need a remake. No. I don't feel like. The Last of Us played fine, and the remake plays the same.
Yes.
basically.
Yeah.
The Resident Evil games, though, by and large, like their remakes, the things that they're doing are like massive and substantial, and they're bringing mm-hmm. them up. Whereas, like, hey, here's a game that you probably missed, may have missed, want to play, but we acknowledge that it's not necessarily easy to jump in and play a 25-year-old game. Here is a new version of it that we are taking and making more accessible to you and allowing yeah. you to like come into the franchise. And like they're doing that so well, and it's really interesting to see. And I'm really excited. Like, even if I never played another Resident Evil game, like I'm still rooting for them, just being like, man, you guys are doing it. You're living yeah. the dream. Like coming yeah. out with remaking your old games that are really like benefiting from this, and also making some like bang ass new games.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you guys are having a moment. Plus at the same time, they're coming out with Monster Hunter and they have Street Fighter 6 coming out soon. And you know, they're killing it. They're
just, Capcom's they're going. King right now.
Yeah. For a long time, they weren't.
No.
That's the thing. When I was a kid, I remember I loved Capcom to death. And then like at some point they were having some trouble.
Yeah.
And but now they're back. They're doing it again.
Yeah.
Love it for them.
I do as well. And so I guess I'm trying to think with 4 overall. So for me, who's I'm a weenie with these games. If you're a weenie, the thing that I found worked best for me is because Resident Evil 4, and as I understand with all the other ones, your cadence, your walking cadence is very slow. It just builds the tension, makes it far more, I guess, that butterfly in your stomach. Anytime I would get that, yeah. I would just hit the sprint button, just like your like jog forward button, and it immediately kills it because Leon looks so awkward doing it. It just doesn't look like how a normal person would jog ever or like move at a quicker pace ever. It would immediately just take me like out of that scary situation. I'm like, all right, here we go. And so many of the levels where it was very much intentionally designed, I think, for you to like want to crouch and stealth like around and away from everything. I was just like, no, I will not be doing that. I am just going to run and run as fast as I can. That worked phenomenally well for me up until chapter 13, when you're on the island and you kind of get trapped in this room with these enemies that you need a special thing to be able to take them down, but you also have to do all these puzzles and everything while they're still like moving around, and you can kind of slow them down, but they're a lot faster than you think. And so you're moving around this contained area trying to avoid these essentially invincible monsters. And that's when it got a little too much for me. I had to put it down for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and that was the, so the, I mean, regenerators, as they're called. Those were the characters that I was looking. I was least looking forward to them. I knew coming back into it, I was like, shit. It's like, I cannot remember when they pop up. I was like, that is the part of the game that I'm least looking forward to, because because it is a thing where the game does have this arc where it's like very beginning is very like tense and scary, and it eventually like kind of levels off to more of an action game with a horror backdrop. And then it's like, there's a section of it that all of a sudden becomes really,
it just traps like, you in there with
really
them.
Rough.
And it's not a scene where it's like, it's not the, I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me. He's like, no, I'm trapped in here with you. Please let me go.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm super excited to see what they do going forward, because I assume they're going to keep making remakes, like,
yes,
at least for the next couple of games, because 5 and 6 would bring them up to their like modern games.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 and 6 both, I mean 6 especially, but I mean 5 too, like, are more divisive and not like as popular. So I'm interested to see what they do. And if those games are like well received. I mean, even Resident Evil 3 was like not as like well regarded as 2.
Yeah.
And it may kind of land the same way where it's like, you know, it's good. It's the best version of that game. As no 4. But it may just kind of be that direction. But still, I'm down to play through that. And which 5, I mean, if I remember, I never played 6. 5 was the only one that I had played prior to any of this. But 5 has very strong ties to 4. Like, I think the virus that like the infected people that you're fighting are like a evolved version of the Las Plagas virus from 4. So there is a pretty strong tie to that. So I would be interested in seeing how they pull that in with 4, like bringing that in and really kind of continuing that along. I don't know. Enjoyed it. Loved it.
I really enjoyed it. As soon as I finish, I'm like, do I replay this? I would like to replay it, I think. And probably will sometime this year, but it definitely, I want to play the other ones now. And looking at them, okay, 8 is the next step for me. Really a step back, but I know there's also another sequence in 8 that's like very horrific
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, then it's down to like 2, 3, and then 7's at the very end if I ever get there.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I will.
Which, speaking of Corey, look at you, segue. I started playing Resident Evil 7.
Oh, you monster. You dog.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. Like, it's been a weird thing. Like, when I played Resident Evil 2, I got to the end of it, and there was a part of me that was, like, craving more Resident Evil. Like, that's the entire reason that because I played through Leon's playthrough, and I was like, I'm not going to play Claire's for a while. But then I started playing other stuff. I was like, I kind of want to play Claire's playthrough. So then I did. And then I finished that. And then, like, that was kind of the thing that tempted me to get Resident Evil 4. Was I was like, I kind of would like to play, play Resident Evil 4. Yeah. And so, like, I beat Resident Evil 4. And then it was like, well, I mean, Resident Evil 7 is on PlayStation Plus. I can download
I have it downloaded.
Yeah. I was like, might as well. Now, I will say, Resident Evil 7 is breaking a little bit in me.
Finally.
It is. It's. So I will say, like, so at this point I have gotten to, for people who have played the game, I've finished the main house. So after, so like there are different sections. I think there are like 7 chapters, quote unquote. The end of the main house would be the end of like chapter 2, and you're moving on to like the, I think it's called like the outer house or the guest house or something like that. You're kind of like making your way across this estate. And so that's where I am. Like, not super far, but I think the main house is generally considered like the most, like the best part of Resident Evil 7. Like, I think most people kind of look at it that way. So I've had that experience. I will say that, like, once you get into like the game proper, it feels a lot like Resident Evil. It feels a lot like first person Resident Evil, because you're doing, you know, you're doing the puzzle stuff. You're going around, you're finding this, like, this thing, like it's the head of a 3-headed dog thing that you have to plug into this wall to open a door to, like, whatever. You know, it's that kind of stuff. They're doing those things. You're finding ammo. You're doing inventory management. You're, you know, the first hour legitimately, like, is more like PT than Resident Evil. I would say, like, it is,
no thanks,
because it is like, you don't have, barring kind of like an end sequence at the end of like what I would say is like the first chapter of the game, it mainly is kind of like a walking sim, and it has much more like, it doesn't feel like Resident Evil. It feels more like an on rails, like you are experiencing the dread of this place, right? Essentially, you are not like, you're not fighting back. You're not here to fight back. You're here to experience what this is. And I felt like, I think it was like anticipatory, like as I was doing it, I was like, man, like I know something's coming, but I could feel my anxiety like kind of going through. I was like, shit. I was like, this is not it. And, but yeah, that first, I would say, I mean, at least so far, I don't know what people think, but at least so far, like that first area is by and large the worst part. After I got through and got to what is the like dinner scene that then opens you up into the main house, that has been fine. Like, on that end, like, whenever it comes to the scary stuff, doesn't feel all that scary. The scariest thing is just the place is disgusting. So it's a lot of, like, browns, and there are a lot of, like, bugs and cockroaches, and, like, it just feels gross.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the most unsettling thing about it. Also, I will say, if for you, for anybody listening, if you're going to play Resident Evil 7, I do recommend playing Resident Evil 2 first, because for one, like Resident Evil, I think the biggest thing, Resident Evil 2 primed me for the fact that like there are, I assume there will be more later, but there are characters that will kind of stalk you at a certain point, like yeah. in the same way that Mr. X does. Like in the main house, it's Jack Baker. So he's okay. coming around and like, it's not like he's not super prevalent, but it is a thing where it's like, I'll go down a hallway and then he'll pop out and I'll be like, well, shit, I gotta, but it prepared me because okay. it was like, okay, I'm used to this. I did this with Mr. X. Jack's a little creepier because like Mr. X didn't talk. Jack is like giggling behind you. Oh, no. That's a little rough. No. That, yeah, it's,
so no for me, dog.
I am taking my time. As you, yeah. is what I'm saying. Because it is like, I am not like actively just like pouring into this because like legitimately even two did not really feel that scary. Like it felt tense. It did not feel scary. Like even the regenerator sequences from Resident yeah. Evil 4 feel scarier to me than anything in Resident Evil 2. Okay. Like legitimately, like okay. that's, it's not that yeah, bad.
First regenerator it popped up. Oh, what the?
it feels like Resident Evil 2 just feels tense. I think like some of the tensest parts of it is like, you are not showered with ammo. You have to be more careful. You're having to like, encounters feel like they matter more than in 4, where it's like yeah. in 4, you can just mow people down constantly. Yeah. I think that that's one of the tenser things about it. 7 legitimately does feel like a step beyond where this is like, there's some stuff.
These 3 bullets matter more than anything.
And legitimately, like, it combines it where it's like, not just in imagery, but it also too, the fact that like, I don't have much ammo does not really help. But yeah, I'm very interested in seeing how Resident Evil 8 compares, since Resident yep. Evil 8 is like of the same breed. It is a first person shooter. It's with Ethan Winters.
Yep.
But it takes more inspiration from 4, where you do have more guns. Yep. You do have like the I can't remember his name, but like the merchant equivalent.
Yeah.
In that, selling you upgrades and stuff, and it's designed to be a little bit more. Like, I'm curious how that feels, like what that looks like. So yeah, I mean, it's helpful that 7 is shorter. Because I think it's like, I think it clocks in at something like 8 hours or yeah, something. Like it's right around about how long like Resident Evil 2 was, which isn't really all that long. It's just, you know.
Yeah, push through.
It's a combination of everything. It's a combination of it's honestly for me more than anything, it's the setting. Like how dirty everything is really mm-hmm. does get to me. Yeah. Like just like that, how brown and dirty and gross everything is really like, it's not doing it for me. So I'm interested. I am interested in moving forward because like moving forward, you're moving into these other areas that maybe aren't quite like that, but do have other issues. I don't know. More thoughts to come on Resident Evil 7, but
to you, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking for any opportunity to just kind of be like, well, I can't play Resident Evil 7 tonight. Yeah. Oh, well. Just,
shucks.
But yeah, I very much just kind of bit the bullet and was like, I'm going to face this one down. If I can do this, I can do anything. And that's where I am. So
good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. 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 Other than that, I mean, I'm rounding out my big stuff because I know that you've got something big to talk about, which I've also played, so I can have some thoughts on it. But yeah, other than that, I mean, like the other stuff that I've been playing, I've been playing a little bit of Majora's Mask. Nice. I'm through the first temple there. So that's been fun. It's, you know, it's really, it is a very interesting deviation from, because I've never played Majora's Mask previously. I'm playing on 3DS. Ooh. I thought about playing on Switch, but the Switch is the like N64 version. I know that there are people that prefer that, but it's just, I have it on 3DS. I was like, well, it looks better. Yeah. It runs better. I'll probably just go this way with it. Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm really enjoying it. I don't have like super fully formed thoughts because I'm still pretty early, but yeah, it is just a really, I think it's a really interesting game. And again, like, you know, we've talked about it at different points with like offshoot Zelda games, but mm-hmm. you know, it's nice to have those every once in a while. And then also too, started Advanced Wars Reboot Camp 1 and 2. I've only played a few missions, but really enjoying it. I haven't played Advanced Wars in years. Loved Advanced Wars whenever I was a kid, ate it up. And so it's very fun to be back in that again and just, you know, I think it also helps because like I've read a couple of reviews of people being like, it's worth noting that it does feel a little gross at times to like be playing a war game where it's like everybody's happy and smiling, but you're like gunning down. But like it does have the vibe about it that it's like, that it's almost pretend because like the way that it, like the map is kind of like, if you were to zoom out on the map, it's almost kind of like it's in a cardboard box diorama. And it almost kind of has the vibe of like, oh, this is the imagination of like two kids who are playing war against each other. Like it's not real. And that is the like thing with it, is that it does like, it's very like tongue in cheek, anime like kind of war games type of thing, but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of like interesting strategy, and it's a very different departure from something like Fire Emblem, because it is much more like, rather than all of your characters are these very like precious heroes, you're playing with like your CO is your precious hero who is not on the field. They're just commanding things. Everything else is expendable. So it's just like, I will buy and build 80 different tanks and throw them at you until I break your barrier. And then I will come through and take you. And like, you know, it's a different type of strategy game, but I love the Advance Wars series. Really excited to continue digging in and play more of it, and you know, further this year, Wargroove 2 is coming out, and so this lane of strategy is gonna keep on all 2023.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Okay, Corey. Yeah. Now, no holding back. You started playing a game.
Yep.
You also like in talking about it you didn't tell me to get it, but I had already been on the fence of playing it for the longest time. So I ended up picking it up.
Yes.
But in that, I ended up playing 8 to 10 hours.
Respectable amount.
You ended up playing in a week and a half. How many hours?
This is what my PlayStation says. 87.
Okay, wonderful. And what is this game, Corey?
So before we get into this, I had top of the show, we talked tore my ACL. I've been out of work for a week recovering, been couch ridden, recliner ridden, you name it. Not much I can really do other than lay around, whether it's in here or I've been also outside reading. But not much I can do. So all my time has been spent playing this one game, even though I picked up Dredge based on what you had said.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm at the final palace dungeon of Persona 4 Golden. And made it all the way there. picked up Burning Shores as well from Horizon Forbidden West. Had all these, you know, was about to start A Link to the Past. But nope, I last Tuesday decided to try out the trial for Crusader Kings 3.
Yes, there it is.
I think I saw a meme about it, and I'm like, that's funny, what's this game? And I looked at it, I'm like, wait, I've heard about this. And then I was looking, I'm like, I think I would like this. Let me look. Oh, there's a trial on it. If you have the PlayStation subscription, I'll do a 3-hour trial. 3 hours later. Oh no. And
is my wife now.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, so Crusader Kings 3 has consumed my life for the past week.
Love it.
It is made by Paradox Studios or Paradox Interactive Studios, something along those lines.
Which I will say, for anybody who's listening to this podcast, and I've brought up City Skylines, made by the same people.
Yep. So. It is a grand strategy game set in medieval Eastern world. Eastern Hemisphere, sort of like mid Africa up, all the way over
West to East. Cause I think East kind of implies that it's more Asian, but,
Portugal, Spain, Africa, all the way to
Russia. It's not America. So it's not like that far West, but yeah, it's like, it's Ireland, England, eastward to the, you know, ancient India and area of culture and stuff. So,
So it is a grand strategy game where you can take up a real ruler who existed at this time, in many different, phases of that time. Between 1806 to 1067 are the two start times where you can play as what's his name? The Irish guy in the tutorial.
Brian Marshald.
Mm-hmm. You can play like Ivar the Boneless, a Viking as well. So I did the tutorial where you're doing Brian, Beorian, the Irish king. Did that. And then did a second playthrough where I chose the Duchess Matilda out of Tuscany. And you essentially take on as this existing ruler and essentially just kind of do whatever you want to do. Do you want to reform Ireland? Because when you start out, you just have the petty kingdom of Munster, and then there's the petty kingdom of Ulster, and the petty kingdom of Concarach. I mispronounced that. And then there's Wales, you know, there's Mercia, East Anglia, Essex, Wessex, Northumbria. You go all around. It's all the old ancient kingdoms and everything before it is what you know today. And you can again choose your play style. Do you want to reform Ireland and is that your goal for this playthrough? It's or do you want to form Britain? So on and so forth. The catch to this all is that the game ends 1453, no matter what, which is the end of the medieval era. And so you have, depending on your start time, that much time to essentially accomplish your goals. So that is the basis of the game that is wildly, wildly in depth and complicated and has many, many systems all going at once and is very dense, I would say.
Yep.
But has consumed me.
Yeah, you've texted me plenty. We've talked about it. But I'm very interested in, like, I mean, legitimately, like, how you've wrapped your brain around it. Because I think it's an understatement to say that the game is dense. Like,
yeah, that is an understatement. It is,
like,
systems on systems on systems.
Yeah, I mean, I very carefully went through the tutorial, played it, grasped. I mean, I went through a solid portion of the tutorial campaign, because it does set you up with, like, a tutorial campaign where it then lets the rails off and lets you kind of continue playing it. Also watched, like, I read guides. I watched, like, this hour-long beginner's guide thing that had, like, very in-depth stuff about, like, different relationships and stuff that you should consider and all this kind of stuff. And, like, even after I've played, like, I didn't complete anything, but I played a couple of different characters and families, and, like, even still, it feels overwhelming. Yeah. And I feel like I have no clue what is going on at any given moment. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm now the leader of this. Like, I mean, case in point, like, most recently I started, I can't even remember the guy's name, but it's this, like, Iberian conflict.
Yeah.
Where there are, like, three brothers, because
Portugal-Spain one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can start, I mean, it's worth noting, like, you can start as literally anybody.
Yes.
Like, you can zoom in and just be like, I want to play as this character, and this is who my campaign is. But it sets you up with, like, make
somebody too.
Right. It sets you up as kind of like, here are some key conflicts, like, you know, try this. And it kind of even rates them as, like, this one's good for beginners. Mm-hmm. This one's pretty hard, but, like, it kind of, like, lets you loop into these larger conflicts. I jumped into that, and it was like, so in the first 3 years of my guy's rule, I both married the mother of the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, and I was killed by my brother. And it was like, all of it came so fast, and I didn't even, like, whenever it was like, oh, I guess I'll marry this person. Oh, I now have the Holy Roman Empire on my side in conflicts. I'm going to whip some brother ass, and then he kills me. And it was like, and then I moved on from there, and then I, like, played as the brother, and then all of my vassals turned on me, and eventually, like, by the time I stopped, I had gone from owning, like, a solid, having taken over all of this, to now owning a single county, being the single owner of a single county, as, like, my cousin now ruled. I was like, what in the world is happening? I was like, I suck so much at the game. And it is, like, it is so impenetrable, it feels like. And I feel like I mean, my hat's off to you for, like, picking it up and being able to wrap your head around it. Because, like, whenever you're having these conversations, like, you were talking like the people in these videos who were, like, walking me through it, where you're like, oh yeah, like, I went through this, and then this happened, and then, like, I knew I had to go do this. And I was like, how did you know you had to? Because in my brain, I'm just trying to, like, keep my vassals happy enough to not revolt, is basically where I am moment to moment.
So this will probably make you feel better, but also you might not ever play it again. I've done two full playthroughs. I'm in the last 20 years of my second one. I did the Ireland conflict, went all the way to the end there, didn't do, somehow Wales got so strong, and also I didn't understand the mechanics, and I essentially, like, married off, like, half of Ireland. I got some of it back. But And then I had like spots of Ireland and like England, Scotland, and like even down into France, which is at one point I was very close to like just having Ireland, yep. which would have just turned into Britain. I could have turned it into the empire, into that. And then, so I picked it, I went, Duchess Matilda of Tuscany, got to like the kingdom of Italia, or Italy. And then my vassals revolted, like you said, broke apart, tried it again, didn't make it nowhere near as far, tried it a third time, which is where I'm at now. And I have 20 years left. I'm the emperor of Italia that spans from the edge of Spain all the way to about Russia, with like France is still there, the Holy Roman Empire is still there, Poland, Bohemia, and a couple other like small countries like have maintained their independence for now.
Yeah.
Probably will, only 20 years left. I'm aiming for the Byzantines. But all that's being said, I wouldn't say it's till like very recently that I've like understood everything that I'm doing.
Or, yeah.
And even now, I don't think I understand everything I'm doing. Because there's so many different things going on in this game. Yes, people, how it works is you can start out as a count. I've learned the difference between like a count, a duke, all of that. And so like there's a tier system. So like you have mayors of cities. Cities reside within a county. There is the count of a county who oversees that county. And then within a certain amount of counties remains a duchy, which is where a duke or a duchess reigns. And then that duchy can be very large as well. And then within that duchy, most of the time exists a kingdom. Not always, though.
Yeah.
So all that
and
being...
And then there are empires.
There are empires.
And then there are aliens. And yes. Then there are the fourth wall breaking... just entities that come through every once in a while and be like, hey, get up off the couch.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
Sit outside, touch grass. Yeah. All that being said, mechanic-wise, like, you know, okay, you have, whenever, regardless of your station, you're going to have people on your council. And so you have your holy faith leader. You have a counselor who handles... like diplomatic relationships. You have your steward who handles coins, taxes, all of that. Your marshal who handles your levies and armies. And then you have your spy master who's digging for secrets. It's such, basically figuring out who's doing who most of the time.
Yeah.
And so,
speaking of people are doing it.
People
are doing it.
Like your brother killed you.
A cat pulled out my headphones.
No, you're keep going. Well, I'm waiting for his headphones to get plugged back in. Your brother killed you. So what you could have done is had your spy master, who's looking for secrets or disrupting schemes within the game, or you can like sway people, try to sway them to your side, make them like you, increase your opinion of them, make them less likely to kill you. Maybe more likely to do you a favor, maybe more likely to agree with you when you're trying to change some laws or rules, so on and so forth. Other schemes involve murder. Your spy master can discover these. And so a good thing to do is if you know you have like known rivals or people that you're actively or they're actively working against you, is have your spy master find secrets around them or around you. And most of the times, like they'll uncover a murder plot. Okay, who's trying to murder me? And then like they'll eventually reveal it to you. So, okay, I know this person's trying to murder me. And I can do a couple different things. I can do a murder scheme back to them. I can, if I'm high enough, I can just imprison them. My vassals might not like that, but, you know, sometimes it is what it is with them.
I'll imprison you too.
You can challenge them to a duel if you've gone, depending on, because... your character has classes. You can go any of those main classes or like a learning class, which I haven't done yet. I've stuck with diplomatic most of the time because I've learned you can just like offer vassalage, which is you can just ask people, hey, do you want to be my vassal? And if you have a high enough like diplomacy stat, like most of the time they're just gonna be like, eh, sure. That's kind of what I did on this tail end. I had this Empress Fortuna, basically just vassal back half of France and Spain for me. Just like, hey, yeah, you in? And most people were like, yeah, you're a living legend. Sure. So
it's a very, like, you know, not to go in super dense about everything, but like, you know, at the end of the day, like, it is a very, it's a very complex thing.
Oh yeah.
And I think that that's one of the biggest draws. Window. Right. Like, I think it's one of the biggest draws about the game is like, and I think that that's one of the things that is like tough is that like you were playing an entire dynasty.
Yes.
You were playing like, I mean, that's the hope. Like, the only way you lose is if you don't have any heirs.
Yep.
You just die and nobody can inherit your kingdom.
Which almost happened to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the, like, and that's the thing is, like, you're trying to, and I think that that's the tough thing is, like, I can wrap my head around, like, playing in the moment, but setting up that long game of, like, oh, man, I'm going to breed this, I'm going to go, like, eugenics on child.
I've gone full eugenics now here at the end, and it's made a world of difference.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing is like the like breaking into that where it's like I'm gonna set my heir up, I'm gonna be birthing some monster babies. Like,
yeah,
that's the part of the game that I haven't like wrapped my head around. But it's a fascinating thing because the game is like, make no mistake, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, you know, I like a little strategy here and there, like, be assured, like, so do I, but this is like a whole nother level. But if you're really, to me, it seems like a good-ish comparison is something like, what if Game of Thrones met Risk, essentially? Yes, like, yeah, that level of, like, Game of Thrones, intrigue.
Like, on Steam, like, expansion that someone made.
Okay. But it has that level of like intrigue and that level of like just depth to it, but at a grand scale of like what it takes to actually like move these pieces around and conquer the world in all of these, you know, massive ways. And like, it's a very, again, it's something where it's like, I'm very interested in learning it. I want to continue like learning the systems because I do want to kind of break through that. But it is no joke. It is an impenetrable
thing.
It's, I will say.
Like me, I'm plotting like, okay, I right now I'm wanting to take on the Byzantine Empire, but my vassals want independence. They want to form the Kingdom of Sicily and be independent from me. Absolutely not. And so I have like 20 people with like an army of 30,000 up against my army of 75. Foolish. I could call. So where I was leading up to, we were talking about before, I had built my standing army into like the 60,000-70,000 mark, and I have enough like allies because my current emperor of Italia has 9 children. And you can set up alliances based on marriages within the game.
Yep.
And so I essentially had my army up to about 200,000 if they all accepted my call to war, because I was going to go take the Byzantine Empire. I am going to go take the Byzantine Empire. But so while I'm trying to do that, I can see on the faction page, like, they want to lower my crown authority, which I probably should have just gone with it because there's 4 stages of it. Only at stage 4, you can designate your heir, which is like the eugenic side of the game where it's like, okay, I can see which of my kids is the best. Like, who's the best of the best, like, within their stats. It's like, okay, he or she is my heir, like calling it now kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I'm naming them, and then you can let them drop it down to 3, and you got like 20 years where around 15, they might get a little antsy with you, but you have 15 years to really kind of do what you want. When they're trying, those are usually called liberty factions. And so during all this, I see them like they're building their way up, but I'm keeping my army big enough to where like they don't have enough power to try to enforce their demands, because that's what they can do. They'll give you a choice, like, you can just do this, what we want, and we're happy, or we'll take you to war over it. I should have just been like, sure, whatever. But I had like these two twin boys. I wasn't sure which one. I could tell they were both going to be the best. I just wasn't sure which one was the best. So I really should have just picked and moved on with my day. But then I could see this independence faction. And then I can see there are, because the Byzantine Empire has moved so far over, there's another faith faction that is turning into like a peasant army that are wanting to have their own independence as well. So I have these three factions all going at once. I have a rival who's trying to kill me that my spy master's like working diligently to figure out who it is. We found out it was my rival. I'm trying to take on the Byzantines. So I have my priest fabricating claims on different counties. I'm paying him to like essentially forge documents saying, yeah, I found somewhere here, yep, you know, here, give me some money and I'll consider it done, kind of a thing. I'm doing all of that, but I'm also trying to vassalize half of Europe. And so I'm like trying to sway them, inviting them to my court. I'm inviting them to feast, taking them hunting, stuff along those lines of like trying to like butter them up. So they'll just, you know, come on in, let's get this army up to like 300K kind of a thing. So all of this is all happening simultaneously. And you're trying to work it all. You're trying to like keep, while all this is also happening, all the alliances you've made are like, hey, people are trying to F my ish up too right now. Can you come help me fight in this war? If you say no, it's a big penalty against you of your fame, because you have different you have different levels of things. You have like your fame, your faith devotion, your dynasty lineage. And there's one more that is just gold, I think. You have all these different things. You can only declare wars when you have gold. When you're in a war, it burns through your gold so quickly. I mean, I can go on and on with these mechanics all day, but that like you are balanced. You have like 20 plates spinning all at once, and you're just trying to keep everything going, or it will all come crashing down really, really quickly. But I think for me, I've just found it like mesmerizing to like, okay, like play this Game of Thrones essentially is what it is. And like, okay, like I know it tight. I need more horsemen. I need more siege engines as well. Like I'm trying to have like one or two different divisions of my army, like hunkering down, taking fortresses. But then I'm trying to have like 5 different like hit and run kind of guys, like sections of my army, just like flying through. Is like, okay, you're taking out like these smaller groups of enemy armies that are trying to like go and get to their siege engines. It's like your goal is to like cut them off and like just take them out in the middle of the field. And so it's a lot of horsemen, a lot of light footmen, just like moving all together. But it's so good. I personally don't think this is like a 10 out of a 10 game or like the greatest game ever. I think just for like my interest and like the way I really enjoy these, this is Football Manager on crack, like levels of like
Game of Thrones
in depth. Yeah.
Football Manager.
Yes. But like these kind of things where it's like really dense, like management mechanics. And like, I just love, I don't know what it is. It might just be how my brain works. But I love it so, so much. And it's so good. So good.
And I thought that I did too, but I am apparently not cut out for it. but I'm going to keep plugging along. I'm going to do my best. And maybe one day I'll be able to conquer the world.
I think I've seen people have almost conquered the world, and I know these are people who are like thousands of hours deep in this game. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm struggling, like to like. I've saved the Pope for last because I know that's just bad. There's no coming back from that in terms of my like devotion levels. Like, what do you mean you declared war against the Pope? I declared war against the Pope. My bad.
Yeah. Yep.
Kind of a thing. I can't imagine it. There, Genghis Khan is in the game, and you can see the Mongol Empire at one point onto the right of the screen, like creeping in. I'm like, guys, I'm like, it's one of those moments where it's like, can we all just, you know, come
put
together?
Put things aside.
And- yeah. Yep. As you can see, it takes up literally like a quarter of the entire map at around the 1300 mark, 1250 to 1300 mark. You're just like looking like over your shoulder, like, it's like Jaws, like theme is playing. It's terrifying.
Yeah, I would imagine. Seems like it. Yeah, for anybody just curious, Crusader Kings 3 has a 91 on Metacritic, which is not bad. It does, however, place it. I was trying to see if I could actually like find it on this list, but it does unfortunately place it because of that at number. Still haven't found it yet. Hold on, everybody. 300 and something best game of all time, according to Metacritic.
Wow.
So honestly, I still have not found it. So it's in there. 300. It is below Chained Echoes though, according to Metacritic. Yeah. Metacritic, Chained Echoes also got a 91. So did Mass Effect apparently.
The first one?
Who knows? The first one. Yeah. Oh,
2 is way better.
Crusader Kings 3, number the 374th best game of all time, sandwiched between the original Resident Evil and Psychonauts 2.
Good company.
It is a few points above Persona 5 Royal.
That's
the best game of all time.
I would disagree. Persona 5 / Royal, I think, should be a top tenner.
Yeah. Just while we're having this discussion, before we wind down, or as we wind down, what do you think's the top 10 best games on Metacritic of all time?
Ocarina of Time.
Okay. That's number one.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. God of War 2018.
God of War 2018. No.
Okay.
I will see if I can find it, but no, it is not.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh, I feel weird saying Elden Ring, but Elden Ring?
Elden Ring is number 40, or number 36, number 40. I think it depends on the version, but it's in the like 30 to 40 range.
Okay, okay. Is there anything within the last decade?
Yes, there is. So there are two games that have come out in the last 10 years.
Okay.
One of them came out in 2013.
The Last of Us.
One of them came out in 2018 and does not God of War 2018.
Gosh. What else came out in 2018? Spider-Man came out in 2018.
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild came out like 2017.
Breath of the Wild did come out in 2017. Breath of the Wild is number 14 on the list.
Came out in 2018. So.
It's got cowboys.
Red Dead 2?
Red Dead 2.
Red Dead 2 is
97
really good.
On Metacritic.
It is
number 8.
It is
top
really,
10.
Really good.
Yeah. Also, we talked about him earlier.
Mario.
Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, 6 and 7. Yeah.
Super Mario Galaxy is phenomenal. I haven't played Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Grand Theft Auto 5.
Never also, played it, but checks out.
Yeah, Grand Theft Auto 5 and Grand Theft Auto 4. Also, top 10.
Okay.
Rounding out the list, Disco Elysium, number 11.
Really?
Metroid Prime, it's, number like 19-ish. Super Mario Odyssey, number 20-something.
Wow.
Resident Evil 4, number 30. Not even. Mm. Not even in the top 25.
Still. I mean, to be, I think, in the top like 500 games of all time, you've done something very well.
Let's see what the number...
Where's Celeste?
Celeste was right there around Persona 5 Royal. It was... granted, take this with a grain of salt because it's all based on like what a Metacritic's scoring. So in some cases, like, I mean, I just saw a version of Disco Elysium is ranked number 11. A version of Disco Elysium is also ranked number like 400. So, but yeah, Celeste was number 379, a single point below Persona 5 Royal, a single point above Madden NFL 2005.
Oh gosh, for getting into that. No.
The number, just for reference, number 500 is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 on the original Xbox.
Yeah, not as good as 1 and 2.
Yeah. By comparison, Hollow Knight, number 9 or 494.
See, Hollow Knight's so much better than 494.
Yeah. A point below Persona 4. on PS2, so I don't know if Golden ranks.
Persona 4 Golden's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
I will
but
say,
Corey,
I'm gonna
no, go ahead.
I'm gonna
Sorry.
Finish this, these final 20 years, and then I think we're gonna be like, I just need to set this down for a bit, play Dredge, play Burning Shores,
leave it installed, Golden, come back to it later,
finish Golden,
see what, see, mm-hmm. yeah,
and then and come back to it later. I know everything now, and it's like, okay, where do I want to start? I think is now the biggest question. Because I've did Ireland, sort of. It's one of those things like, do I go back and try to do Ireland again, knowing everything now, and see if I can't just do it, you know?
Yeah.
Or do I like start? Do I try to make Poland? Poland is very much a kingdom and a country within the game, but do I like go for the empire or try to make Germany or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
Decisions.
I feel you. Yeah. But yeah, Corey, I mean, at the risk of making this a 4-hour episode,
I could go on. I could tell you the tales of the Delacusa dynasty and how one of my kings was murdered. And it's genuinely terrifying because it's a visual novel as well. It basically gives you, here's what's happened. It's like you feel a thump on the back of your head. You wake up in a cold, damp cell. No one ever comes for you. You slowly go insane. And it's like, you look up his like cause of death and it's like disappeared without a trace. I'm like, what do you mean? I disappeared without a trace. I'm the emperor of Italy. I am one of the most powerful men in the world. What do you mean? It's without a trace. And I looked into it and they're like, if you're on PC, you can like look through and figure out who did it, kind of a thing. Gotcha. But on consoles, they don't have it to where you can go in and like scrub through the game to figure it out. I'm like,
love it.
This is like, I just really want to know who did it. Like at this rate.
Yeah. My guy was murdered in a canoe. By an arrow.
That happened to me before as well. My most recent father, I guess, was killed by a bandit attack. So on and so forth. There's a couple of... there was like a string where like three died like really quickly. Like there was... I was playing like a 4-year-old like girl at one point. I'm like, is this... Is this it? is this what's going on? But like, who was it? Someone was attacking, like, Italy rallied behind me. And we were like, let's go. And it worked out.
Love it. Corey, this is an episode.
It is an episode.
Undoubtedly we will have more Crusader Kings talks in the future.
Absolutely.
Next week, expect more Advance Wars from me.
Probably Burning
maybe
Shores
for more. Maybe more Resident Evil 7 from me. Maybe. I don't know.
Find out.
We'll see. But yeah, in the meantime, Corey, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet?
If you want to find me on the internet and see my gross knee, follow me at #SlingingThrasher on Instagram or StayThrashy on Twitter. But always and most importantly, follow our Arcade_Cozy on Twitter as well. And you?
Yeah. You can find me at 4PointPixel on Instagram. At this point, if, I don't know if I'll have posted about it yet, but if you follow me there and you are familiar with the 4Point store, I will be closing that soon. just rounding it out, just setting it down and moving forward. And, so yeah, if you guys, see something you like in there and you want to pick it up, feel free. It'll be up. I haven't really decided when, but that's the plan, is I'll just kind of sunset that and let it be a part of the foundation on which I build my next
Modern
thing.
Empire.
Who knows? My empire. But yeah, 4PointPixel on Instagram, Swiss Von Joe on Twitter, if Twitter still exists. At any point in the future. ArcadeCozy@gmail.com. Questions, comments, concerns, send them through. Intro/outro music by Johnny B. Good 89 on Instagram. You can find him. He does stuff, plays cool music.
Yeah, he does.
Cool fella. But yeah, Corey, in the meantime, I hope you continue to feel better.
Me too.
Break yourself out of the Crusader Kings stranglehold and find a way to push forward with your life.
Yeah.
You've got this. We'll I believe in you. Yeah. But until then, Corey, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too? Yeah.
I'll give you a little bit of money.
Yeah.